What's going on? This is Hoppy Hour. I am your host, Ryan Hoppy, and on the phone line is Kevin Kellum. What's going on, bro?
What's going on, Ryan? Another radio man who I've never met that I know is a radio man. I'm told you're a man of the airwaves.
Well, yeah, I work at 102.5 The Bone. I'm like the backup, like board op producer, and then I produce all the weekend shows, and then I host this podcast. So that's pretty much me. Now, Kevin, I was a huge fan of WKQX, and I used to listen to it, and I believe I heard you on there before, but I also know you do a ton of other things. So I was trying to figure out how to begin this interview, but like when I look you up, you got so much going on your website, which is a good thing. You're keeping yourself busy, so that's a good thing. But so real quickly, let my audience know everything you're up to.
Well, as my mom would say, you do too many things that I can't tell my friends about. But I do a lot of those things. So I was with WKQX. Many people will remember it under a different name, but it's 101 WKQX. I've been with them for, on air for like almost six. And then that ended a few months ago, you know, with the pandemic and everything. Stuff happens, right?
Yeah.
And then, but I had a great time. I think we'll get into that. And then I've been doing comedy, like, just as long as I was doing college radio and, like, high school. Chicago, you can, like, get on a train and, like, go to Second City where, like, half the people from SNL trained. You could do that. As, like, a teenage kid, you could do that, which is kind of, like, crazy when I tell other people from other parts of the country. But, like, it was just – that was fun. So I got into comedy through that. I've been doing stand-up, really, for, like, the past 7 or 6 years, really. I was doing improv as well. And then I've worked at – a couple of wrestling websites in between all the radio gigs, and now I'm with the number one sports app in all of India, Sportskeeda. So I'm with them now, and we're doing video and podcasting stuff, and interviewing Drew McIntyre from WWE tomorrow. So that's pretty sweet.
Okay, so let's begin with WWE, and I'll explain my relationship with it. So I had Roman Catholic parents that were against everything. So growing up, it was bad. It was dumb. It was evil. Then 4 years ago, I went to a Monday Night Raw in Tampa, and I got to see it like up close with my friend who had connections, and I got to see behind the scenes afterwards. And I went from despising it to not getting it and having respect for it. And I've been in that same place since then. My girlfriend was watching WrestleMania last month, and I had no idea what was going on. And I think I have this arrogant attitude that I need to get rid of, that I judge it because it's fake, even though I watch Aqua Teen every night. So how can I get into wrestling? What's the key to like a beginner's guide to accepting it?
It feels kind of intimidating, especially when you talk about your girlfriend watched WrestleMania last month, and that's like the Super Bowl of it, right? That'd be like if you didn't watch football for years, and then someone just puts on a playoff game, and you're like, who are these guys? Like, I haven't been playing fantasy. So I get it, and it's almost like if you never watched, never saw a Marvel movie, and someone just dropped The Last Avengers in your lap. It's a pretty immersive world. But you can hop into it pretty easily, but especially with WWE, there's just so much of it. They have three different weekly shows. They have a competitor now out of Jacksonville called AEW that's on TNT. So it can be a lot. I would say just pick one show with a few favorite wrestlers and focus on them, and that's about it. And like once you have your favorites, just watch when they're on, and that'll get you through. There's nothing wrong with being a casual fan of everything. The illusion is that you have to be like a hardcore fan. You know what I mean? Like you have to know everything and love everything. And I think that's a lie. Like, you can go and see a band and just be like, hey, I like this one album from them, and I know they're going to play a bunch of those songs. So if you go to WWE like you did, you're like, oh, that guy's cool. That guy, I don't know. This guy's cool. This girl's cool. I like what they're doing. That's fine. That's what I'm going to focus on. If you get that much out of it, then you win. That's it doesn't have to be like this thing you embrace as your whole lifestyle. Me, it is, because I'm a dork, and it bothers people around me, but I love it, man. I absolutely adore it. It's the best thing in the world. Good guys, bad guys. Comic books in real life.
So the one thing that has helped me get more into wrestling is meeting some of the people that are a part of wrestling. For example, Titus O'Neil is the Saint of Tampa Bay. I've met him.
He is.
I've met him at various gigs when I worked promotions years ago. And then Mark Merrow used to call. We had this home improvement show on 102.5 The Bone that we produced, and he would call in once a week when the show was on to give life advice. And then I'm friends with Micah Rotunda, who's the daughter of Mike Rotunda, and then she has a show on the weekend at The Bone. And I think that kind of helped me accept wrestling more. I would say it's been the last 3 years that I've been getting more into it from afar. Like, when you meet the people that are the personalities and you see that they're good at turning it on when the camera's on, but at the same time, you know, being normal, I think that's what I appreciate. Because it feels like athletes never know how to turn it off, bro. That's something I notice.
Like just last night, WWE has a deal now with A&E, the biography series, and they did one on Macho Man, who was quite the figure, Macho Man Randy Savage, in Tampa, Florida. Dude, Tampa is like wrestling town. Like, Hogan lives there. Roman Reigns, who's the top guy in WWE right now, lives there. You know, The Rock was a staple at the U in Miami. So, like, especially Florida, it has decades and decades of wrestling into it. Like, there's so many big people that live down there. I could lose count of how many that live in the general Tampa area. So, I mean, I get it where you're just like, oh, I'm around it, whatever. It's just something I hear about at the bar, especially if it's like a lot of people around locally. Like, if you lived in like me, in Chicago, everyone wants like pizza all the time. I was like, no, deep dish, it's fine, but it's like steak. You only get it out now and then. That's how when I talk to friends of mine from Florida, like, oh, wrestling, I only watch like the big shows every year. You don't watch it all the time. It's too much because you're around it all the time. You know what I mean? It's like overwhelming. You're like, ah, whatever. You know, but I get it. But no, they're real people doing real stuff. They get really hurt. You know what I mean? I know. I'm working a promotion on Friday called AAW, and it's one of the top independent promotions in the country. A lot of their guys have gone on to WWE or gone on to play in the big leagues overseas or everywhere. Seth Rollins started there. He's big in WWE right now, but he's just one of many, right? And I've seen guys get banged up there real bad. And I'm backstage doing like the broadcasting part of it. And I was just like, oh, wow, man, I would never want to do it. Especially when you get to see it up close, you see how well they do it. And the craft of just getting in the ring and doing that stuff and not getting hurt is incredible. And I would say some of these guys, a good majority of them, including the women, I include them in the guys thing, are probably better athletes than a lot of people you'll see Sunday afternoons in the NFL, you know, and there's more dynamic skill and the things and the sacrifices they have to make. No one else has to do, but I get it. It's wrestling. It's fake, right? But isn't every TV show to some degree fake in some way or another? You know what I mean? Like Law and Order Special Victims Unit. They're not real cops. Would you like if I ran into the living room while you're watching Law and Order Special Victims Unit and yelled, they're not real cops. None of them are real cops. But with wrestling, there is this sense of people that think they know better than the people that watch wrestling. Like, if you watch wrestling, you got to be stupid, right? Like, don't you know this is... But, I mean, do you go into a theater and pay $15 to see the new Spider-Man movie and think that this teenager is crawling up walls? No, you're going in and you're enjoying a story. At some point, wrestling just gave up the idea of kayfabe, that it's prefabricated, that it's a real sport. In many ways, it still is a real sport. It's a real sport no different than like gymnastics or dancing is. They know what they're going to do before they get out there. It's how well they can do it. And then the entertainment part is, can the story they tell deliver on it? And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't. But when it hits, man, when it's perfect, there's nothing like it. And getting back to fans and stuff like that, you guys just had WrestleMania at Raymond James.
Yeah.
It's going to be a special time. Wrestling is, I guarantee this, wrestling will be the first major touring live act before, like, you know, the Ice Capades or anything like that. They'll be on the road before the big rock bands are. You see a lot of those rock bands are pushing their tours back until next year. There'll be some festivals and stuff this year. But, like, in terms of running in arenas, and it isn't basketball or hockey, it's going to be pro wrestling right after them, before the end of the year.
You know Vince McMahon, and I don't know much about him, but I know he is just itching to do a tour. You know he's already planning it.
But everyone says that, and like, you know, WWE, they were pinched with WrestleMania last year when it was supposed to be in Tampa. It got delayed to this year, and there, some people say they didn't do tests. I think they bounced back the right way. They did the virtual audience thing, kind of mirrored what the NBA was doing, and then just went even further with it. And then, you know, they're adapting as best they can. They're doing a lot of testing. That doesn't mean like kissing their butt. That's just like how they adapt to do it, just like everyone else did. You know, I mean, if they could be on the road today and it was safe, they would do it. There's some talk. There's been some talk of WWE doing it. I've talked to people that have worked at the company and said that they think it'll happen before the end of the year. I don't think they'll do Nick Khan, who's the vice president of WWE, he's one of the main guys under Vince McMahon, says that once they're back on the road, they're going to be back on the road. It isn't going to be like, we're only going to go out for WrestleMania like they did in Tampa this year. That was only two nights, and then they were, you know, back into closed sets and the virtual audience thing. No, when they're back on the road, they're back on the road. And I have a feeling, I'm not saying it as the Sports Kita guy, I have a feeling that they're going to be back on the road, and they'll do it before the major rock bands. It'll be, what is it, like basketball's doing limited audiences, hockey's doing it, baseball obviously has huge crowds, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's just a matter of, are they going to run arenas? Are they going to try and run some open-air places? You know, AEW in Jacksonville, they're looking at doing a few thousand people. They have around 1,200 people at their shows now, and they'll be at some point of full capacity in an open-air amphitheater on the that's on the Jacksonville's campus, the Daly's Place. They're on TNT every Wednesday night doing great numbers. Chris Jericho's there. Another Tampa guy, right? I think he's a Tampa guy.
Yeah, I believe
I think they're going to have live crowds, and they may even be on the road before sometime in the summer, around the same time that WWE. So they're definitely, I would say one of them is going to want to do it before the other one. That's the essential thing I have. If AEW is the new WCW, they're going to want to beat, you know, Vince McMahon up in New York before then.
And I feel like there's this thing where people are sort of waiting until you can do full capacity to go to shows. I feel like some people are like, I'm only going to go to, and this isn't just wrestling. I feel like this goes.
No, it's all entertainment.
But
yeah.
I am very fortunate through my job. I've gotten two tickets. So I've gone to two different Raptors games because they're not playing in Canada. They're playing in Tampa. And there is a very intimate once in a lifetime feeling about going to one of these shows where there's not that many people. It's weird. It's hard to pay attention.
I love how you called the game a show. But when you go to basketball, it feels like a show because whenever they have the breaks, there's like the dancers and the DJs. Like NBA has that showy feel to it. I can see what you're saying.
No, but it feels like a show because like there's not that many people there. You can hear the players talking. And then the best part is because it's the Raptors, every break they're playing a beat from a Drake song. It's the most beautiful thing. Like they were letting you know that Drake runs that team. And they weren't even playing the good Drake from like 12 years ago. They were playing like Drake from 2 years ago. I was like, you're not going to play like vintage Drake. So it's an experience to go to any show that has 1,200 people. It's bizarre.
Is it bizarre because it's like 1,200 people in this big, giant, cavernous arena that could fit a lot more people?
And then it's weird because, like, the security guards have to, like, let you know, like, wear your mask. But then at the same time, it's like you're at an event. Like, really, like, that's what kind of takes away the fun is, like, the whole time I'm going, I'm wearing a mask right now. Like, you can't take it off. It's because of the rules.
I get it, though. I know. I know Florida is a different Wild West thing. I have friends down there as well. I'm putting ice in my teeth. I think it's definitely like up here in Chicago, the sentiment's been a little bit different because, you know, we had a different wave of it, you know, and we had a pretty serious wave of it. I'm doing the comedy thing now, and like you're going to shows where, you know, comedy, you can do it with 25 people and it can still be really good. Like you can do that type of show and spread people out. And I did some shows up in Wisconsin at the Laughing Tap in Milwaukee and they had 20 people and yeah, you can feel the difference between 80 and 20 people. But if they motivate them and they do it right, it can work. But I can see where you're going to like a ball game and it's like 1,200 people in like a 25,000 seat arena. That's going to feel empty.
Yeah.
But then my thing is like, well, just start, I don't know. I don't have the solutions, but I'm like, just get your shots and go to the game, man. Like that's going to happen too. I mean, like there's going to come a point where there's going to be festivals and you know, those big destination festivals, where, all right, you want to get into this, you got to have your shots and you're going to have to wear a mask just in case. And I'm just like, do whatever you can. I don't know why people have such a problem with the mask thing. There's like a dental hygienist that's wearing one right now. That's like cleaning people's teeth, but you're mad about it because you have to wear it when you go get your groceries. It's like, come on.
It's because they're being told to. It's an authority thing.
It's It's the you don't get to tell me what to do.
Yeah,
America.
Exactly.
America, man. America, dude. No one tells me what to do, but I buy a T-shirt. I also have a cell phone that has my social security number on it,
yeah.
And I tell corporations my locations at all times, and then they sell my data. But you don't get to tell me what to do. Like, you know, it's like no, but Facebook does. You know, like so I'd be like, what are you complaining about? You know, it's like, come on, dude. Like, I just don't think people, they think there's this big, I'm not trying to get political. I know we kind of sort of did. But it's just like, everybody wants to get back to life, dude. Just play by the rules. You know what I mean? And just be nice. You don't want to be considerate of somebody else. I think the main thing is you just said, hey, be considerate of people around you. Wear a mask. I think that would be more helpful, you know? But yeah, just these are the rules, you know? And like, that is too, I agree with you. It's people don't want to be told what to do. It's me.
I just want to be left alone, bro. Like, I remember in the beginning of COVID, like, probably through the second week of April, I wasn't wearing my mask before they mandated it, but I also didn't know enough about COVID because I was just spending 3 to 4 weeks watching TV shows before I really began learning about it. But once I learned that I need to wear my mask, I've worn my mask since then. But there's this weird thing where it's like, I just don't want to have people look at me. I don't want to be yelled at. I just want to be left alone. And I think the people that don't want to wear the masks don't mind the confrontation. Like they crave the,
almost like they're seeking it out.
Yes.
Like they're like, hey, I've had these arguments with people on the internet. Now I want to go have those arguments in real life. and it's like, they don't know what they're telling me what to do. And there's always a personality fault and someone who comes to your party to start a fight, you know?
Yeah.
And we're just trying to have the party again, man. You know, my thing is like, what is it going to prove? Like, what are you going to gain from it? Not much. And you're not going to gain really anything at all. I don't know. I'm not trying to get, I just want people to get back to like being in live entertainment. Cause that's a big part of like your world and my world. And like, I wonder if I'd still be on the radio if we could have handled this thing the way other parts of the world did before, you know, we got our heads out of our collective asses. But that's just me. I'm not talking for anyone I work with or have worked for, but I'm just saying, I don't know. I just wish it was better than it is. And you feel for everyone who's dealing with it worse than we are, because some people are out there. You know, I don't know. I just think there's, if you're doing that, it's like, are you really considering someone you don't know? Is it really just, don't make me have to care about somebody I never have to meet, which is what it's really about.
It was funny. Like, so I grew up on 101.1. I grew up on Q101. I was a huge fan of Mancow growing up, then Sherman and Tingle. And it was funny. I know people either love or hate Mancow. I've talked to him via via DM, and he's bizarre to talk to because the way he texts is the same way he talks, where like he'll half type a word and then move on. It's the most he's the most bizarre person I've ever sent a text to. But I thought when he got, it was really bizarre. He's like, because I asked him, and I swear this is going somewhere, but I asked him, would you want to come on my, I asked him, this is my man cow tale. I asked him if he'd want to come on my podcast sometime, and he types, well, I could come on your podcast, but do I want to come on your, and he didn't like spell out podcast. And I was like, dude, you can just say no. But my, so like, it was weird getting shit on by this dude that I grew up listening to. But here's what I loved. I loved when he got let go by WLS and it was in Robert Feeder. And I thought he explained radio perfectly. I'm having fun in Tampa, but I thought when he said there's no more joy in radio anymore, that being the headline for when he got canned at WLS, I thought that was like the perfect way. And people were like, oh, well, he's mad because he can't do his morning zoo anymore. He can't.
He's the bitter radio guy who doesn't get it. Yeah.
And then all the haters were immediately saying he doesn't get it. He wants to have women there. He wants to have 9 people there. But then I thought it was great. Lindsay, who was on the loop, she tweeted at Mankow, and she was like, I don't agree with anything you say politically, but I get what you're saying. And I thought what Mankow said about radio was like how I feel, but I don't feel as much because I wasn't really alive for when he was in his heyday. So Are you feeling the way he expressed where it's like there's no joy anymore? Is that how you're feeling?
Wow, asking me how I feel about radio now is a hard question to answer, and I want to be very calculated in my response.
Yes.
'Cause I want to be honest with you, but I want to be one of those people that like gives you the safe response. Because you know this works. Like, you've been around the ringer. Have you gotten the layoff on the beach phone call already?
Okay, do you want to hear my it wasn't really laid off. Okay. So I'll tell you real.
It was worse.
No, bro. It was, I wouldn't say legendary, but it's kept me alive in Cleveland. So I worked.
Okay.
So I worked for Rovers Morning Glory in Cleveland. And I was like the joke of the show. Like, I was 21 years old. I joined the show in Cleveland. I was a virgin at the time. Since then, I've grown up. But like Rover, he makes Mankow look likable. Like, Rover is just so scummy, whatever. Anyway, so they were looking for a reason to get rid of me. So on St. Patrick's Day in 2015, I got blackout drunk on their bar crawl where we went to like 7 different bars in Cleveland. And then
were they pumping you full of drinks?
Yes.
Okay.
And then I allegedly...
And you're 21, right?
Yes.
And you're 21.
Yes. And I allegedly smoked a blunt with a listener in an alley that was -10 degrees in Cleveland. I know. So that was my...
So are you telling me that people in radio wouldn't do that? That's ridiculous.
Exactly.
That is ridiculous. Exactly. I am allegedly, supposedly, reportedly, we're using all of our legal words that we have to use, right?
Yes.
Okay.
But and he's bashed me since I've left because he's mad that I've gone on to bigger and better things. But what I'm saying is that's my on the beach was I signed a 12-month lease and I had to break it and had my mom help me and I moved and I've. This is actually my 6th anniversary in Tampa and getting the hell out of Cleveland, which was because Cleveland is like a wannabe Chicago. It's like if Chicago had a really bad armpit smell. Like, it really wants to be Chicago, bro, and it's not.
Well, have you ever seen that like viral video? It's a great sketch video. I think it was Cleveland, and I'm sorry to anyone that's in Cleveland. I'm sorry to any comedy bookers that are gonna not want to book me after I make fun of their town. But they're comedians. And it was a great thing. It was like 10 years ago, and I remember like people. It was an ad.
I know exactly what you're saying.
Like, it's like our fire's been on our river's been on fire since 1985.
Yeah, I've seen that.
At least we're not Detroit.
At least
we're not Detroit. Like, and it was just like, oh, okay, that's pretty bad. But I live in Chicago, and everyone has this like weird reputation of my town and like what that is. But I love Chicago.
Are you from Chicago?
Born and raised.
Me too.
Yeah, born and raised. Where? What part of Chicago are you
from? I was from Arlington Heights. It's convenient to say Chicago, but I went to the...
You're from the Northwest Burbs. You're from the Burbs.
Yes.
You know what drives people from Chicago crazy? I bet people from New York like this too. But people, when someone from like Queens says they're from New York City, no, you're from Queens. You're a fan of the Yankees. You know, like I want the preference. Like, I'm a fan of the Cubs. I'm from Arlington Heights. That drives people from Chicago crazy. No, I'm from the south side of Chicago. We lived in Oklahoma in the burbs for a little bit, and that's when I started doing college radio. But no, I've lived in the city for well over 10 years, did the tour guide stuff. So I was like showing off the city, like it was my currency for a while too. And then my brother's in the police department. My grandfather was. I had another grandfather was an alderman. I can't get it out of my blood. It's just... No matter where I go, I'll always have this weird accent when I start drinking too much. Start saying 1, 2, 3 over there, over here, that type of thing.
Do you know where St. Bart's is in Chicago? The church, it's off of Six Corners by any chance?
Oh yeah. I have an idea of it. That's another thing. Chicago, big Catholic town too. Well, so
this is how I'm going to defend myself by saying I have some Chicago in me. My dad grew up in a house down the block from St. Bart's, and that's where he went to class with my two aunts. So he grew up around St. Bart's. So growing up before my grandpa died in 2010.
It's in your blood.
It's in my
blood.
I just have to defend myself because I don't want to come off like I'm super. Like, I do have Chicago in me. It's just.
It's okay. We can shit on Cleveland, though, right? Yeah. We can do that, Ryan. Are we allowed to do that?
Oh, dude, totally. It's the thing with Cleveland is it's very miserable. It's Chicago's not happy, but it's not grumpy. But Cleveland's got this, like, the reason why Rover works there is because he's mean, but his whole audience is mean. And they'll say to me, you're a loser. You're never going to make it, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, okay. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it's always somebody with a private account that has like a beard who just looks fucking angry at life.
Or the people on Facebook that have the profile photo that's just like a skull, you know? like, it's just a skull, and it's like a variant of the Punisher logo for some reason.
Yes.
Remember when Punisher comic books were cool?
Yeah.
Before someone like ruined it. Radio, we were talking about radio. Radio's weird. I don't know. I've been doing it a long time. I've had a really rough road with it and been through the ringer with it. I don't think we have enough time to get into that. But I'm also, I mean, WKQX, I don't care what anyone says, it's the top rock radio station in the country.
I agree.
And I mean, up there with like, up there with the great alternative stations that are, they got two great ones now in LA. And I think there's some great stuff on Sirius XM. Everyone says the joy of radio is gone. I was like, the joy of radio as you remember it is gone. I think that's the key. And that's when someone says something to Mancow, like, you don't think it. And there's nothing wrong with Mancow saying that. And I don't want to make it just seem like, oh, I'm writing him off because he's from another generation or anything like that. Because also, he hit really hard. Like, he was a hit. He was an irrefutable hit. So, and also, that's okay, you know? I think we're doing a podcast right now. We can do this radio show. We're doing a radio show that people can download. And the thing is, like, you and I maybe went to broadcast school and we went the professional route.
I did.
And we worked at big radio stations and you worked at a promotional event. We did the promotion thing. We drove the van. We did all that grunt stuff. But also there's this weird thing where does radio mean the same thing if I can pick up my phone and record something and put it on the internet? So I guess there's the idea that magic is gone, the era of exclusivity that you can only get on air. I remember when I got on my college radio station, it felt like a dream. You know, like I was a high school kid. They let me on a college radio station. It felt like an absolute dream. Podcasting was like sort of it.
And I
but
think,
by the time, you know.
Here's
go ahead. I don't mean to cut you off.
No. Here's what I think it is. I think, you know how, like, when you go on social media, you kind of overthink things and start to believe. So, like, if you read a lot of Fox News, you're going to believe what the right says. And if you read a lot of MSNBC, you're going to believe what the left says. Okay. Mm-hmm. I think the problem with Chicago radio is I respect Robert Feeder, but I think because Jonathan Brandmeier, Mike North, Mancow, Eddie and Jobo, even though Eddie's cool as hell, but more Jobo, Mancow, Dahl, Gary Meyer, Rokon, because those were like the big dogs of Chicago, I think because they didn't really work in the 2010s, I feel like there's this perception because those seven big voices say that radio is dead, radio's dead. But they're also from a different generation, and to get a little inside baseball, all those guys, Mancow, Brandmeier, Dahl, they didn't work with PPM when people realized how long they were listening to them. Because, like, you look at Fred on Kiss FM, and he's killing it. Sherman and Tingle are killing it. Eric's doing fine on the mix. So I think it's more because Robert Feeder does the clickbait about all the guys that were ginormous. It's kind of like propaganda where it's like radio's dead. And that's how I start to – I've started
– But, thinking, I mean, I'll make an exception there with Steve Dahl and – I'll be frank. I have a nice correspondence with Steve. I think Steve is like in Howard Stern territory.
I agree.
Of great radio people. And he's, here's the thing. He got back into LS. He was one of those guys who was an early adopter of podcasts.
Yes.
He has it behind the pay window. And also, it's worth the money. I listen to it often. It's really fun. And he's doing the show without like any type of FCC limitation. And I think that's the adaption. That's not the joy of radio. The joy of radio is, to some degree, what you and I are doing right now, because we can narrow cast. I think the joy is that you can be broad. You can be on a big broadcasting platform. I mean, broad in the general sense of the word, and almost say like this, you're going to tune into this thing that anyone can tune into, but this is really for you. This is really for the alternative audience. This is really for the talk radio audience. This is really for the classic rock audience. And I think there's that joy of the sense of anyone can get this, but this is for you. And with podcasting, it just cuts out all of that and says you can just get it yourself. I don't think the joy of radio is gone because there's still millions of people listening to it. The PPM thing is annoying because I think it's how do you get that technology so wrong?
Yes.
How is it so inaccurate? How is it so not the same? How does it not have any correlation to the interactions you have with people? And it turns radio into like the stock market in a weird way where like everyone's just trying to like short your bet. And I don't know, like it seems like it should be a better rating system than it is. How do 15 people in a major city with beepers on their belt loops determine the livelihood of hundreds of people and millions of dollars? How do we not, you know what I mean? Like, think about that. That's the sampling for anyone listening. That's the sampling for some PPM markets, like a handful of people of different age groups, maybe not even enough age groups that actually represent the audience they're supposed to represent. But how do you do that? How come there isn't like a couple hundred thousand people in New York City with those beepers on registering what they're listening to? And how is the time that people spend with a podcast from a radio station like the one you're on not contributing to the overall listenership of it? Like, we have to sell it as this different number. That wouldn't work if you went into a restaurant. The restaurant would know everything is selling this way. It wouldn't be like, no, here's what we did on carry out and here's what we did in dine in. You could separate the numbers, but like for us, for radio, it's like, oh, radio's died. That's just such BS. Because there's still millions of people listening to it. You just don't listen to it the same way you used to. Another thing is you have younger people that grow into listening to radio now. It's reverse. You discover radio when we were kids and we grew up with it. Now people grow into listening to it. And it's like, oh, wow. You know, I've met several of my friends who said, I got away from radio and now I listen to it because of my work pattern or my day.
Yeah.
Or I listen to a podcast. If you listen to a podcast, you're just downloading a radio show. And, oh, I don't have radio. I have SiriusXM. You have the HBO of radio, dude. You have a cable package.
So
you have a radio show that you listen to. So I don't know. I think you're listening to like audio that's programmed for you. You're listening to radio. That's my take.
Here's my thing though. That makes me a little bit, I wouldn't say nervous, because you can't view it in a negative way. But I think what's a little nerve wracking is it was easier to be discovered because you would turn on your radio and like for me it was Eddie and Jovo, Mancow, Mike North, Brandmeier, Melissa Foreman, just like during the Christmas time, like it was easy to just turn on your radio and see what's on. But I think what's kind of hard is imagine if Chicago radio had 900,000 different formats. It's the way of getting discovered is I think what the problem is I listen to some of these podcasts and I'm not trying to like swing my dick and say I'm better, but you hear some of these podcasts and you're like, there should be like an approval, and I get that would be against the internet, but
there's no gateway. There's no like, you have to be this tall to ride, you know, like there's no, you're right, there's like anyone, well, how could you, why would you go to school for radio if anyone could just pick up their phone and start doing a radio show? And I get that to a point. I get that, but it's also, you and I have trained this a little bit. If we wanted to do a morning radio show, that's a different challenge with formats. A podcast is a free-flowing thing. We're not going to get interrupted by having to take a break or go to music right now. It's a completely different thing. You know, this is raw steak, you know, with no sides. So I get it, man. And also like, you bring up those names, Chicago radio, it's still one of the best radio markets in the country, but radio in general is this fear, I think, of we don't want people to really be stars. You know, we want the station to be the star, yes, which is fine. And like, there's nothing wrong with that. But at some point, does that mean you have to completely flip the balance, the sense of the personality, the human touch, the thing that makes radio different from a Spotify playlist, that can engage you in real time, like actually talk to you over text? You know, like, come on, you've been there. When you get a great response to a bit and someone says, that was really funny, or, you know, I disagree, but I'm still listening. Like, that's awesome. Like, they really, really, to do that in real time, you know? I mean, what's the difference between someone who's a hit on YouTube who gets, like, a million followers? People talking, oh, my nephew was telling me this. He's, like, 15 or 16. He listened to the radio when I was on it, and he's like, oh, I don't check it out nearly as much. That's fine. And he tells me about YouTube people, and he's like, well, there's this one YouTube show I watched, and, like, 50,000 people watched it this week. How many people heard me talk or say something silly before a Green Day song a year ago? Probably well over 50,000 people.
Yeah.
You know, like, and so, like, I was like, so think about that. Like, and that isn't a metric that determines that, because we have these weird rating systems we have to deal with. So when people see the internet and it's a little bit more transparent, you know, and there's a game to that too, right? Then they're like, well, the internet must be kicking your ass. It's just like, no, their numbers are just so obvious. And also, if less people listen to the radio, but the people that do listen to it, I don't want to say few, but the people that do, the significant people that do, they listen for longer. What's the difference? Haven't we just carved out our audience then? If someone spends hours with your show and they listen to three or four of these episodes, God bless you, man. Thank you. Thank you for doing that. I hope you had a good time. Hope we said something interesting or made you laugh or chuckle or something like that, you know? And that still means something. I think, hopefully with the pandemic, that like kind of like reorganizes our sense of consideration. Like, that's been my big thing in the last year and a half. Like, yeah, it sucks. I lost my gig at KQX, but I still love everybody there, you know? And I get it. None of it's like personal. But I don't stop loving radio because something crappy happened to me. But that's like saying you don't want to play music because you're not in a band anymore. Like, you know, like, that's not fair. And that's why, you know, trudge on, man. And I just hope people are just more considerate of each other in that sense, because it's just weird how radio is like, we can't let anyone get like here, you know? And I think that's just like a fear. That's like an anxiety from a whole other side of things.
What's driving me nuts now, when I say this, I get mixed responses. Like, Mike McVeigh agreed with me, but then when I interviewed him, but then some like Gen X radio guys disagreed with me. So I'll say this.
Mike McVeigh, great guy. Oh, very, dude, very talented guy.
Dude,
Wizard of radio.
He's my hero. Yeah. He agreed with this, so I feel like it's probably true. But there's no risks anymore. For example, and I don't want to keep, because I was a fan of Mancow, I don't want to keep bringing him up, but like, when he was brought into Chicago, people thought he would fail. I guess a more recent example that's not as archaic would be Fred on Kiss FM. People thought, how are you going to replace Drex with Fred? How are you going to replace Jay Nice when he did that 10-year run from Eddie and Jobo? When you take a risk, things happen. And I think the problem is there hasn't been any risks within the last 10 years in radio. And if there was a risk, it was bringing back somebody from the 90s that they took a risk on. And I think because there's so much money involved and because of all the ads, because I'm an on-air talent in Tampa, but I don't know enough about the inside because I don't like hang out with my program director. But I just think there's not talent being grown, Kevin, and they're not taking that risk. And then they're wondering why people are leaving. Do you feel that?
Yeah, because they don't want to bet. Here's the testiest thing I'll say. There's a lot of people in radio in 2019, before the pandemic, at least you could say that. I hope they're still saying that.
Yeah.
That says that that people behind the speaker are the greatest resource of what we do. And I'm not just saying talent. I'm saying actual people. The programming, the promotions department, God bless. I hope all the promotions people come back. Who've just been eviscerated from coast to coast by this thing, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not the only one. There's many, many people, you know? So that's another thing where you got, you know, brothers and sisters who shot a t-shirt out of a cannon at a state fair.
Hell yeah.
Hoping that they can just be in a parking lot handing out koozies again, you know? And I've done that hustle, and so have you, and you feel that. And I think that's a tangible thing. But there's a lot of people who say, oh, they're the greatest resource. And then what happens? Like, they just become, sadly, do you just make us names in a spreadsheet then? And I'm not in their position. So, like, my level of judgment is just what I get to see, right?
Exactly.
So I try to be objective because the it's on them. And sometimes you do just become that. You do just become a name in a spreadsheet in like, a budget line item. And that isn't, like, me being bitter. That's just me being, real about it.
It's a fact.
It's a fact. And it's manageable. But my point then becomes, well, when people come at our industry and say, hey, how come you don't have stars anymore? How come you don't create stars? It's, well, you know, like, the risk of that is, you know, and then it becomes, well, do you want that star to leave? Do you want that guy to be bigger than the team, you know, or do you want the franchise of the team to be bigger? So there's that too, you know, so it's this weird balance. And it makes me also realize I don't want to be a program director, or maybe I do. maybe I just want to be like an assistant program director. You know, I just want to be the music director. Like, let me bet on a band before, you know, like that type of thing. But I, like I said, I love everyone I've worked with. Like, you brought up Mike McVay. I've seen some of his stuff on socials. I love when you meet radio people who've been doing it longer than you, and they have really fun stories.
Yeah.
And, like, really ridiculous stories. And like, I was posting some pictures of, like different promotional t-shirts, like when people would get those satin jackets in the 80s and, like, all of that stuff. Ryan, I know we're talking Radio Shop stuff.
Yeah.
You know, they have all these documentaries, like these true crime documentaries. Like, I think they're kind of like, they're like played out at this point, right?
Yeah.
Every murderer gets a show now, which is
annoying.
I think there needs to be like a big budget Netflix, Hulu, one of the streaming services. There needs to be one that's about radio stations across the country, like on the level of what Stern, you know, Stern had his history of Howard Stern and like Private Parts.
Yes.
It was just like, I want a documentary about the radio wars. Like, there was the big hip hop radio war in New York City with Power and Hot 97 and the stuff with there was a Rock 103.5 and the old Q101, the well before WKQX with 101. Like, that would be wild. Like, there's some in like Cleveland, you know, with different stuff like that. I think those would be really entertaining. And like going back like 60s, 70s. Because it's wild then, because people look at radio a completely different way. And like the record industry, the music industry looked at it a completely different way. And I was like, that would be wild. Like, there's so many stories there, especially you see that stuff in Mike McVay, like that. Like, do that. And like, that would bring a different romance to radio. What is that radio? That's that Queen song, Radio Gaga.
Yeah. Are you there? You broke up for a second. All right.
I'm sorry.
You're good. You're good. You got so passionate about singing like Freddie Mercury that I lost you for a second. I think what sucks about radio memory is there's like that realization that some of the shows you grew up listening to, unless somebody recorded it, it doesn't exist anymore. It's really weird because like now, because like people, everybody recorded Opie and Anthony. Everybody recorded Dahl. Everybody recorded Howard, but like I would do anything to hear like, I don't know. I'm trying to like Eddie and Jobo on B96, like shows
like a great, even and not a whole show, but like great bits and like big, like the big best ofs and
Eddie and Jobo on B96, Sherman and Tingle on Q101 12 years ago, like things like that. Like it's unfortunate that now more of those shows were archived, because like you can go on YouTube or like these different Google Drives and get every show of Howard ever, which is fine. I like listening to old Howard, but I do wish there was more archives, because like those air checks on YouTube are fine, but it's just cut up segments. Like I wish more people were like, let's record all 4 hours. Like I just don't think people thought it out in the 80s and 90s about archiving more.
Especially because now with digital, it's kind of like endless. You can just, there's shows I listen to now where I'm like a week behind on them and I'm okay with that. And also, I still like listening to radio I don't make. You know, like that. I think that's one thing I kind of like realized, like when things ended at KQX, I'm like, am I still going to like this? Am I still going to be around this? You know, like you have that sense of things like when someone breaks up with you, am I never going to love again? You know, yeah. You know? But then I'm like, oh no, like I always love doing it. It's still the same thing. So, and when you can listen to the old stuff whenever you want, the ones that make you fall in love with it, that would be great. I would love to like pull up like Mancow, like 98, 99.
Yes.
Like stuff, mind you, some stuff that probably would not fly now, I guess is more entertaining. And then there's also some stuff now that's like, what were they even thinking when they did this?
Yeah.
And you can listen to it with a completely different set of ears. I would love that.
I want to ask you
more of it. Yeah.
Okay. So like everybody in radio hates Mancow. Like so many people in radio hate Mancow. Howard hated Mancow. No. But I'm like a huge fan. Like I listened to him via podcast when he was on WLS. I listened to it on podcast when he was at the Loop. I listened to him when he was on 1530, like 10 years ago in the suburbs.
Oh, so you're a big Mancow Mark fan, man, huh?
It's bizarre. What do you think he did right in Chicago to have that reign for 24 years? What? Because everybody talks about the bad parts of him, but like nobody. And you could so,
but no, like what made Mancow Mancow? Yeah,
what did he do right in your opinion in the 90s and 2000s? Because a lot of people on the outside would go, he was just a vulgarian. But for you, because for me, it was like it was negative 10 degrees out. I'd be waiting at the bus, and this guy yelling at me about sex made my morning. For you, what was it about guys like him, Brad Meyer, Eddie and Jobo? Because
I weirdly, I probably have more direct experiences with Mancow, even though I never worked on a show. I worked down the hall from him.
Yeah.
And I had to, can I tell? Like, this is that thing where, like, can I tell this story? Yeah. Mancow woke me up one day. That was fun. Huh. And he's doing a more, well, they have the green room, right? And there was the beginning of the pandemic, we had to have some people like there for long periods of time to help the station transition into like broadcast from home type stuff. So yeah. We had to have like essentially a board op, right?
Yes.
And so you do the board op and sometimes it's just like you being there supporting the overall programming from another point to the actual output, which is the station and everything, you know? So at the beginning of the pandemic, we had to have people do that. It was kind of like a lot very quickly. So there was some acceptance of like, hey, you're going to be here. There were some nights where I had to get there pretty early, you know, to make sure that everything was going, like everything was prepared for the day. And then it's like, all right, I have 4 hours before I have to do this. I'm going to sleep, you know, and we had couches all over. And I remember Mancow just woke me up one day. What was this? He just closed the door. And I'm just like, that's a guy who's probably, I think he's in the Radio Hall of Fame. If he's not in there already, I think he is already, right?
I don't know.
I was like, that's a Hall. I'm pretty sure he's in there. I want to say, I feel bad that I don't know if he's in or not. I assume he's in there. You know, let's just say he's in there. He's in there. He's a Radio Hall of Famer, right? And he wakes me up and like closes the door or whatever. I was like, oh, what a weird life, you know? Cause like, I was like that kid, like at the bus stop, going to school, listening to Mancow and hearing that first week where he left Rock 103.5 and went to Q101 at the time. And it was like an event. I was in high school. That was an event. And he also wouldn't just end his show at 10 a.m. He would just keep going later and later and later. In terms of pushing the envelope, as you call him, a vulgarian, vulgarians sound like low-level Star Trek aliens.
True.
You know, like when they've already gone through all the other, like, we've already done the Romulans. Now we have the Vulgarians. So we already have all the aliens. What do we have now? Something with an Aryan at the end of it. Vulgarian. And we'll go with that. So like, yeah, he did all that. And I've heard stories from, rest in peace, Jim Lynham, who was on his show for a long, long time. Jim owned AAW, the wrestling promotion I work with, you know? So I've heard many, many stories. And he described it as this, that's another documentary, like this incredible life of just the party of it never ended and this like circus of a show. Was the gimmick, you know, like was no, it was what it was. I mean, certainly I would say he grew and got more political and like changed what he did as he went along, because you want to see someone in their, you know, 50s act like they're 22. I don't think so, you know, but to some degree that wild person is still there, you know? So I would think he got on it because he was a provocateur and he was naturally a provocateur. Like, that wasn't like that partisan gimmick, you know? And oddly, the level of just genuine natural American mania to him, and I mean that in a good way, is what made it interesting. But also, like, think of all those guys you brought up. They're all from one town. That's one city of all of those guys. And they're all different formats and different personalities. And you didn't even mention Kevin Matthews, who is, like, to me, the man of a thousand voices, and also did radio voice character stuff before it got played out. So many different people. And everyone says Howard Stern, and everyone took the morning zoo from him, right? And maybe Mankow took it and went his own direction in it, right? But there's so many of those talented people from Chicago, from one place. They're all from one place. And all from like a 20, 30 year period. So I think that's the pivot of No Joy. Is like, if you were Mankow, you were on 101, if he was on 103.5, at least you could be like, look over the dial, the show I'm competing with. You know what I mean? Or the show that's going to be on the afternoons on a station down the dial. And then on top of it, the Bulls are awesome, you know, and like they're on the radio and the music is great. Alternative music was very, very big then, you know, it wasn't a music that people just said, oh, another song for the 100th time today. It was, I care about the music you're going to play, you know, like you remember those things in a different way. And mind you, it's pre-internet too. So it was like social media before social media was there, you know? So I get the joy of it, but you adapt and you move on. And if this podcast is now how people do it, that's how people do that. And then the radio is how you tell people about the podcast. It's fine. Everyone wants to say radio is dead. And they've been saying that for how many years, Ryan? They've been saying that probably since you started in radio. And it's still here.
So where can people find your work? Where can people find you?
Sure. You can check out my website. It's kevinkellam.com. That's KELLAM.com. I'm on the Twitter machine at Kev Kellam. I will be with AAW Take No Prisoners this Friday, May 7th on worldwide pay-per-view on the Fight TV app. That's FITE. And then you can check out all the video content I do for sportskita.com. And you can download the Sports Kita app, which is really, really good if you just want to follow all of the wrestling stuff in a couple of clicks. MMA as well. It's just a couple of clicks, really easy. All of the content's on there. And we're launching a podcast this week. We're getting into the podcast game this week with an interview with Drew McIntyre from WWE Raw.
Well, dude, I can't believe it's been 53 minutes. Keep up the good work, man. This was a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. We talked a lot of nerd geekery. We've got to have some beers and make fun of Cleveland again.
Hell yeah. Cleveland sucks.
Cleveland rocks. Isn't that what Drew Carey said? Oh, another reference. Another reference. We know that.
You're going to base Cleveland being a good city off of that horrendous sitcom. Come on.
Dude, Drew Carey had some great seasons. First few seasons. I think that show was one of those shows that was maybe on a little bit too long, maybe. Is that fair to say?
Way too long, bro. It's on.
Doesn't mean it wasn't funny. You know what I mean? Doesn't mean it wasn't funny. So
I don't think that show would hold up now. It'd just be cringe.
It's the joy, right? It isn't the same.
Yeah. There's no joy in the Drew Carey show.
I think there's joy. Agree to disagree, man. Thank you for having me on. I knew when some people say, "Call, go talk to Hoppy. He's a radio geek. You guys will eat it up." And I said, "Oh, yeah, sure." And I did. And immediately, like 5 minutes in, I was like, "Oh, this guy gets it. He gets it, man."
Well, dude, keep up the good work. And if you're ever in Tampa, hit me up.
Definitely, dude. I will. Yeah, but bug you for a bone T-shirt in the future.
Hell yeah, I can give you a bone T-shirt whenever, bro.
All right, see you, Ryan.
All right, see you, bro. All right, thank you.
Take care, man.